Export Finance Today from Standard Chartered.
Hello and welcome to Export Finance Today, the podcast series from Standard Chartered about export finance and its impact on economies and society. I'm your host, Kate Borsay, and each episode will be joined by expert guests for their specialist insight into our theme. This episode, our focus is on the complex world of blended finance. Joining me from Standard Chartered is Farouk Mohammed, Global Head of Structured Export Finance. Hi, Farouk.
Hello, I'm glad to be here.
And Kabi Leggett, Global Head Official Institutions. Hello, Kabi.
Hi, Kate. Nice to be here with you today.
Farouk, blended finance is one way to scale up environmental and green funding. Other sectors for this type of investment include energy and transport. How does blended finance work, particularly when applied to emerging economies?
Yeah, in my view, blended finance is an extremely important tool and catalyst to unlock cost-effective long-term financing in emerging markets. And it does so by bringing in the stakeholders who can play to their relative strengths. This can primarily be done through either co-lending or through guaranteed lending. I would again stress on the tenor-adjusted cost-effectiveness of this funding, as it is possible to combine multilateral development bank, development financial institution, and export credit agency financing with private sector to achieve funding costs which may not necessarily be concessional, but are materially lower than financing costs available through commercial options to these emerging markets. And also that this is not just restricted to the environmental and green financing projects, but includes financing of social projects such as hospitals and schools.
And what criteria is used to select a project that's suitable for blended finance?
The most important criteria would be to identify the development impact of the projects. Example, a project which provides potable water to people is a good example of such a project. The second criteria would be, how does the market or the borrower benefit from this? Is it priority for them? It's very different to doing the above projects in an investment-grade country versus a sub-investment-grade country, where cost-effective long-term financing required for such projects may not be available. Lastly, we would also consider if the project fits into existing guidelines for social and green loans. So we have green loan principles, social loan principles, and we also assess whether the project already fits into those criteria or not.
Kabi, when it comes to the risk assessment of blended finance investments, what type of guarantees are key to attracting the private sector?
Assessing and mitigating risks that arise in blended finance transactions is really important. Perhaps it's, in fact, the most important factor, actually, because if the risk can't be managed properly, it's unlikely the project will be able to get off the ground. I think in that context, guarantees from the types of official sector institutions that Farouk just mentioned, the multilateral development banks, development finance institutions, sovereign owned ECAs, you know, basically the official sector, are extremely important to attract and blend in the private sector capital into these transactions. I think MDBs in particular offer unique value add in their guarantee product, given their AAA credit ratings, the halo of their preferred creditor status, and their very strong technical capabilities that they bring to bear in these transactions. In terms of guarantees, I guess there's just two points I would make. First, comprehensive guarantees that provide protection against sovereign borrower non-honoring risk, effectively default, are quite important. Blended finance is often most important and impactful in countries that don't have ready access to the capital markets or that face prohibitive borrowing costs. These countries need the blended finance projects the most, but the reality is they're often also seen as the highest risk. So without some type of risk protection, such as a guarantee from a higher rated institution, it can be challenging to put these types of blended finance transactions together. The second aspect that I want to highlight relates to the quantum of the guarantee that's applied. We've seen everything from 30 to 40% partial credit guarantees all the way up to 100%. And there's pros and cons in deciding which way you go. But the goal is to try to strike the right balance in terms of effectively managing the risk, incentivizing the private sector investors to come into the transaction by helping them mitigate their risk, but also avoiding creating a situation where there's an undue risk burden that's placed onto the official sector guarantee providers, where they feel like they're being asked to do more than they otherwise should.
You've discussed MDB's multilateral development banks briefly, but let's look at that more. What role do they have to play in the structuring of blended finance?
The largest and most sophisticated multilateral development banks enjoy AAA credit ratings, enormous capital resources, very strong technical teams, and they have a development mandate to support the kind of projects that Farouk mentioned earlier, including projects with sort of social imperatives, such as schools and hospitals. Private investors take a lot of comfort when they see an MDB in a blended finance transaction. They know it's gone through extensive review and diligence, and that gives them a lot of confidence that it's the right type of project. So the multilaterals really do have an ability to have a significant catalytic impact.
Yeah, I would like to add to that also that to what Karpi has mentioned, I think from an MDB's impact perspective, absolutely super critical to be there. But there is, in my view, a lot of scope for MDBs to work together with private sector on structuring of these transactions. And it's not just the structuring, but also origination. Because banks are closer, we have boots on the ground in a lot of places. And I believe that that's an area where MDBs and private sector can work together to develop better structuring tools and getting access to more projects than they are currently doing.
And Karpi, how is the global sovereign debt restructuring impacting future support for multilateral development banks?
It's definitely creating some new complexity, and not just for MDBs, actually, but private sector creditors as well. For the MDBs, they enjoy something that's called preferred creditor status, which basically means that they don't get restructured or otherwise forced to participate in sovereign debt restructurings. This year, there's been a renewed debate in G20-related forums driven by some of the sovereign debt defaults and restructurings that have been playing out. The debate has been around this issue about whether or not multilaterals should be involved in some of the debt restructuring. I don't think it's likely that that debate is going to lead to any significant change in the preferred creditor status and the current sort of operating model of the MDBs. But I think it has created some uncertainty. Now, having said that, I think the uncertainty probably is felt a bit more strongly in the private sector, which does participate in sovereign debt restructurings when the loans they hold go into default. And ironically, from the private sector perspective, this dynamic has just made MDBs and the guarantees they provide all the more important when it comes to lending into sovereigns that are facing, you know, either a degree of debt distress or significant and are looking to pursue these blended finance projects.
Farouk, what are Standard Chartered doing in the blended finance space?
SCB specifically has worked extensively with the likes of the Multilateral and Investment Guarantee Authority, the Islamic Corporation for the Insurance of Investment and Export Credit, which is the guarantee arm of Islamic Development Bank, the African Development Bank, and also the World Bank entities like IBRD and IDA in supporting funding of critical projects which met the criteria of these development agencies. We also work a lot with the export credit agencies supporting projects such as hospitals, schools, as well as railway lines, which are considered green given the fact they take traffic off the road. Particularly, I would like to mention that we did a $1.2 billion financing for a water project in Angola, which provides potable water to about 2 million people in Luanda. This was unique given that it had a large financing tranche supported by the World Bank IBRD and a parallel tranche supported by the French Export Credit Agency. We've also done financings in this year for the Senegal government to support the financing of mobile hospitals, mobile ambulances, as well as supporting the government of Senegal for their investment into development of port project in Senegal.
Karpi, it could be argued that there's a lack of demonstrable development effects of blended finance due to weaknesses in evaluation. How can practitioners and beneficiaries consistently measure the level of resources that they mobilize?
Well, it's true that historically, it has at times been challenging to get holistic data on blended finance broadly, and that in turn sometimes made it difficult to get information on the development impact from these financing structures. Part of the challenge, I think, was just over how blended finance as a concept was defined. But I think that's changing. And I think today there's a general consensus around what constitutes blended finance. There's a number of publications that are now covering the space in pretty good detail. I think governments are also becoming more alive to collecting and publishing this data, and as are some private sector entities. And in fact, you know, this has been you know, a very, very important and active space for Standard Chartered in the past, I'm almost more excited about what the future portends, given what you hear about billions to trillions in terms of financing imperative. The World Bank and all the other AAA MDBs are under requests from their sovereign shareholders to find ways to do more and support the world. And Standard Chartered's footprint is such that we have countries that are in dire need of this type of financing solution. So I feel like the stars are aligning. There's going to be a great opportunity going forward to further accelerate all the activity around blended finance.
That sounds really encouraging. Finally, we can see then the rationale that blended finance makes sense from an economic and from a development point of view. For example, investments in renewable technologies that prioritize energy access for some of the poorest people in the world. So Farouk, what's the priority now for improving the system of blended finance?
Yes, how can we do more is the big question. I do think that developmental and export credit agencies and private sector, we need to find a way to crowd in each other for a higher impact on projects in relatively high-risk markets. One way to do this, and this is where currently there is a lot of work being spearheaded by World Bank, is to try and find how we can scale up these opportunities, how can we can scale up the existing resources. One of the ways to do this is looking at increasing the partial credit guarantee capacity of the developmental agencies. I read in a report recently that guarantees issued by MDBs can mobilize 5 times more private capital than MDB loans. However, around 70% of MDB climate portfolios are with loans, whereas only 4% of MDB commitments are in guarantees. So there's a lot of room to grow. So the two things that we are working with as part of Private Sector Lab with the World Bank Institution is to try and find out ways of how we can scale up the guarantee issuances, either through finding better ways to originate and structure transactions more efficiently. And secondly, how is it that we can work together to try and improve the processes and, in my view, MDB processes, particularly around origination and approval and making them less complex. If this can be done and if MDBs can leverage on private sector, not just for capital, but also for operational support, such as due diligence, etc., which export credit agencies already do, then I believe that there is a significant room for improvement and growth, and we will be able to do significantly more than we are currently doing.
Well, that's fascinating. Thank you so much to both of you. That's it for this episode. Farouk, thank you to you.
Thank you.
And Kabi, thank you to you.
Thanks, Kate.
Well, join us again soon when we'll continue to look at export finance and its impact on economies and society. Also, do subscribe to this series so you won't miss an episode. From me, Kate Borsay, Farouk Mohammed and Kabi Leggett, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Export Finance Today. Back soon.